Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
Welcome to The Jerry Ratcliffe Show. I'm Chris Graham, and I get to bring in Jerry Ratcliffe here every week. We talk UVA sports, and we've got one less day to let our conversation here about UVA football sink in tomorrow night. We record this on Thursdays. And tomorrow night, Friday night, Virginia plays at Syracuse in a game that has some fun storylines behind the scenes. Jerry, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Chris. Hope you are. You're right about that. I guess the obvious storyline all week has been the reunification. That's probably not the right word. Former UVA offensive coordinator Robert and I and former UVA quarterback coach Jason Beck are now in those respective positions at Syracuse, and we'll be rolling out the orange carpet for the Wahoos tomorrow night at the new dome, not the new dome, but the new name dome. That's JM Wireless or something like that, not the carrier dome anymore. So it'll be intriguing to see exactly how this unfolds with both those guys at Syracuse and whether Virginia can contain their offense up there, which is a pretty decent offense.
Yeah, I'm going to still call it the Carrier Dome. JMA Wireless didn't give me any money, so exactly. that's not part of the deal there as far as that goes. No, it's and I just saw this note today when I was doing some research for another story. For Virginia's first trip up to Syracuse as a member of the ACC. Last time we were up there was way back in 2005, the middle of the Al Groh era. So Virginia, I think, is the last ACC team to make the trip up to Syracuse, which is interesting. I know one of the questions for Tony Elliott at the presser this week was, you know, he's played there, a coach there as a Clemson assistant coach. You know, how do you get your team ready for the unique challenge of playing in the Carrier Dome? You know, you don't play a lot of games in domes in a normal course of your ACC season. So that's part of it. I also ask about, what familiarity he has with Robert and I's system. And of course, Tony Elliott was an offensive coach at Clemson. So when those two teams met a couple years ago in the ACC championship game, he didn't have to scheme against Robert and I. So he admitted he hadn't given that a lot of thought. And anyway, Robert and I is running he's running the same system, the same scheme, but it's very different this year. He's running the ball a lot more than he did at Virginia, about twice as much, honestly, as he did the last couple years at Virginia. So, you know, the Virginia folks might be familiar with it a little bit, even though John Rudzinski might not necessarily be, but he's kind of dialing things up a little differently than he did the last couple years in Charlottesville.
Yeah, I'll never forget that last trip to Syracuse. That's the only time I've been there for football was in 05 during the Al Groh era. And I don't know about now with JMA Wireless, but back then when it was the Carrier Dome, even though Carrier is the nationally known air conditioning company, this, believe it or not, the Carrier Dome was not air conditioned, and it was incredibly humid in that building. It was an early season game like this one is, and I think it was an afternoon game. And Marcus Higgins got so dehydrated, the Virginia quarterback, that he had to receive an IV at halftime to be able to play the second half, and probably should have been the MVP of the game if they had those. And Virginia won that game. Groh gambled. It was a 4th-and-1 at the Syracuse 9 with time running out, and he elected to run the clock. A lot of people were wondering, well, why don't you just line up and kick a field goal? And he didn't leave any time left for Syracuse to come back. So he gambled on 4th-and-1, handed the ball off to Jason Snelling, who gained 4 yards and a first down. And they did go on to kick a field goal. And Al famously, it's one of his famous quotes from that era, told us, quoted Tom Cruise in the movie Risky Business, and didn't use quite exactly the same language, and said, sometimes you just got to say, what the heck? And all of a sudden, heck wasn't the word he was talking about, but that was also my first trip to Dinosaur Barbecue in Syracuse, which was a memorable experience as well, because it's one of the best barbecue places, or it used to be, on the East Coast. But yeah, you're right about Robert and I think he's running 60% running plays, which last year at Virginia, I think it was 70% passing plays. Part of that might be because he's got a reliable running back in Sean Tucker. It's 5'10", 205 pounds, who has rushed for over 100 yards in two of the three games so far this season. And he ranks 13th, believe it or not, as a sophomore on Syracuse's all-time rushing list, which is a pretty impressive all-time rushing list, as we all know. And so he, you know, he's been pretty good. He's got 2,376 career yards in 23 games, including seven straight contests with impressive yardage. So maybe Dino Babers is a little more demanding of sticking with the running game than Bronco Mendenhall was too.
You know, I looked up their quarterback, Garrett Schrader. He's also pretty good on the ground. And, you know, in an NI system, you need to be as a quarterback. Schrader is averaging 67 yards a game this season. And a little interesting tidbit, he transferred from Mississippi State, and he would have been there for a year with Keaton Thompson. And they were both in a quarterback room. in 2019, when Schrader was a true freshman, now I think Thompson was injured that year and didn't get to play that year. Schrader ended up starting some games in Mississippi State. Then in 2020, they shifted him to wide receiver, kind of like UVA shifted Keaton Thompson, obviously, to wide receiver when he got to UVA in 2020. So those two guys know each other. And if you think of anything, if he's cut from the same mold in a sense as Keaton Thompson, that kind of tells you what kind of quarterback he is. And he's actually doing a lot better this season. Numbers standpoint, last year, he ran for 781 yards last year. Took over as a starter in the fourth week of the season. His passing numbers were kind of pedestrian, you know, like a 52% completion rate, and didn't throw for a lot, but definitely could, you know, move chains with his feet. And this year, 9 touchdowns, no INTs. And so, so obviously that's, you know, that's kind of reminiscent when you look at the running game there. It kind of reminds me more. I wrote a column on this today. It kind of reminds me more of the 2018 UVA offense, when the last time Virginia really had a good running back, at least in the Unai Mendenhall era, Jordan Ellis went over 1,000 yards and Perkins had 923. You know, those, the two guys, Tucker and Schrader this year, could be on pace for similar numbers this year. So, if you're thinking back in your head there, UVA fans listening in, think back to that 2018 Virginia offense, which actually, you know, you had Perkins able to do some stuff in the air. He had some good receivers. He had a running back you could also hand the ball to, and I know I had that at his disposal back then.
Yeah, and Schrader is actually the guy responsible for Tommy DeVito being unseated as Syracuse's starting quarterback and transferring to Illinois. and we all know about him. He's a good-sized quarterback, and Tony Elliott said – the other day, he said he's a big dude. He said it takes more than one guy to bring him down. He can carry two or three tacklers with him. So you can't just arm tackle him. So he will present a problem. He's sixth in the country in points responsible for with 68. And he's already passed for 704 yards and 8 touchdowns and no interceptions. This season, Syracuse has not turned the ball over in any of its three games thus far. So it's going to be a challenge for John Rudzinski's defense to find a way to slow these guys down for sure.
And then on the other side, Tony Elliott talked a lot this week in his presser about how defensively the Syracuse, you know, he said you could play a 10-play drive and you could see 10 different defensive fronts in those 10 plays. Multiple looks, to say the least. And, you know, with a young offensive line like Virginia's got that is getting better each week, but still has a long way to go. Work in progress, I think, really applies that term. You know, you have to worry because Virginia, you know, the loss at Illinois with some talented guys up front, and Virginia just could never figure out how to block them. You know, back to back plays, if even, you know, most plays there were guys in the backfield with Brandon Armstrong. And so, you know, a team like Syracuse that gives you that many different looks, you got to worry if you're a Virginia fan about how that offensive line is going to respond.
You really do. And that will present a problem, I'm sure. The offensive line is a little different than the one that made that trip to Champaign because Jonathan Leach is back now. And they're starting him at right tackle and moved Logan Taylor over to left tackle, where they have been starting Mikhail Boley, a true freshman. And so that's helped a little bit. The other three are pretty much the same, Flores, Furnish, and Devine at left guard, center, and right guard, respectively. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, when you're on a 10-play drive and they throw 10 different fronts at you, that's got to cause some confusion, especially for an inexperienced line like Virginia's. I don't care. Even for an experienced line, that's somewhat of a challenge to recognize exactly what your opponent's doing. And that's some pretty exotic looks, I think, for guys that have no more experience than Virginia does right now.
What's your sense, Jerry, of the offense in progress? This group is still learning the new scheme from Des Kitchings. And, of course, Tony Elliott, he's a former offensive coordinator himself at Clemson. Obviously, some experienced guys back at key positions. Brennan Armstrong is a fifth-year guy. Keaton Thompson's a sixth-year guy. Billy Kemp's a fifth-year guy. Dontavian Wicks had a lot of a lot of reps last year. Lavelle Davis from a couple of years ago. And they seem to be struggling still. And, you know, the offensive line and maybe not being cohesive is part of that, but – you know, Brennan even talked after the game last week that, you know, I think a reporter asked the question along the lines of, you know, did you get that Illinois loss out of your head? And then he said, I did, but then it kind of creeped back in there. And, you know, he was kind of doubting himself a bit. So it seems like they're still maybe struggling with picking up the nuances of this new offense.
They are. It's a more structured offense than they were accustomed to under Anai and back where I think they were allowed to freelance a lot more. Tony and Des Kitchens both would like to see, particularly Armstrong, conform a little bit more into that structure. That's going to be interesting to see how that develops over the course of the season because I think Armstrong is so accustomed to winging it, so to speak, freelancing it, and making things happen. Sometimes it works and sometimes it gets him in trouble. And I think they're trying to narrow the possibilities of him getting in trouble or having to make a hero play to be successful. They don't want to take that away from him, but yet they still want him to play more of a structured position. And how you do that, I don't know, but it's eventually he's going to have to do that if he wants to play in the NFL because you talk about structure, where it's all on other level of structure. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough on him. I know he's frustrated because he's expecting more of himself. His numbers aren't what they were a year ago, even though Virginia has gone over the 500-yard mark in total offense and two of their three games, but his personal numbers aren't what he was expecting and what fans were expecting from him. So I don't know how you balance that out and get things corrected, but I guess maybe they'll work themselves out over the course of a season. I don't know. It's a very odd situation and a very different offense than what he played the last couple of years.
How do you see this one playing out? I think Syracuse, last I looked, eight-point favorite, maybe 9-point favorite, depending on – I haven't looked today. They're a heavy favorite, let's just say, Syracuse is. They're 3-0. They've got a couple of nice wins. Not, you know, they haven't beaten anybody, you know, top 25 or anything like that, but they got a couple of nice wins. Virginia, we're three games in. We still are trying to get an identity on this team. The wins are over ODU and Richmond. No offense to either of those, but those aren't marquee pelts you put up on your mantle. So, you know, what do you think we're going to see out of this Virginia team tomorrow night?
Well, I think they better start fast because they've had, a tendency to kind of stumble out of the blocks a little bit. I think if they do that, they could be in trouble. I think they're going to have to move the ball early and prevent Syracuse from making any big plays early, because if they get behind in the dome, that's a tough place on a Friday night. I don't know that it'll be capacity crowd, but there'll be a lot of people there, and it's very noisy. They call it the Loud House for a reason. And even you can play all the loud music and Syracuse fight songs you want during practice. I don't think anything's going to simulate a crowd noise like that place when it gets rocking. So I wonder a little bit if, Chris, considering it, they could face a lot of different fronts. I wonder if they might try to get that running game going early, try to control the pace of the game, try to control the clock, and keep a nice offense on the sideline as much as they can, at least to begin the game, and not fall behind to a team that's capable of putting, you know, a decent amount of points on the board. Because we've seen what happens when Virginia gets behind, and it hasn't been pretty.
I think Syracuse averaging 37 points, over 500 yards of offense. Yeah.
Yes.
As we saw in past years, Virginia offenses under an eye wanted to get on the field and move up and down the field. And teams that could control clock would frustrate that. I mean, it's like in basketball. A pass break team hates playing Tony Bennett basketball team. So if you can control tempo, control pace, that can be an issue. Hey, I looked up the temperature for tomorrow, by the way, in Syracuse. Might not be bad. 55 degrees is the forecast high. I guess the weather system that's running through us here in Virginia is going to bring it down in the 60s here tomorrow. Is going to do even more damage up there. It's fall apparently already, Jerry. So
I believe it. It is upstate New York, right?
It is upstate New York. Yeah, I woke up this morning. It was 75 degrees at 8 o'clock, and tomorrow we're going to have fall. So and it's going to be even more fall up that way. So at least, you know, maybe the hydration issues won't be the concern there, but certainly the noise. And then, yeah, preparing for, I mean, multiple defensive fronts, multiple defensive looks. And then we know, if there's anything we know about Robert Anae, he's going to give you a million plays to have to prepare for in the playbook defensively. So this is among the harder games you can play, just because you have to be prepared for so darn much.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, just getting back to the weather, of all the times I've been to Syracuse, mostly for basketball, I think that one day in 2005 was the only time I've ever been there where it was over 20 degrees. but it was pretty warm in the building that day. But,
yeah
it is a tough game to prepare for. We asked Tony Elliott if he's going to do any special research or anything. I know he's looked at last year's game film of Virginia games to, I guess, learn more about Anae. He got to know Jason Beck a little bit. Anae was already gone when Tony got here. Beck was here for a while. A lot of people were hoping Beck would stick around and be the quarterback's coach, but that didn't happen. Armstrong was asked if he might spend some time with Rudzinski and other coaches to maybe tip off some tendencies or some philosophies or things that he learned from all the close contact the last 2 years. And he said he didn't anticipate doing that. But when Dino Babers was asked by some of their press corps earlier in the week, did he expect Anae and Beck to spend some time with their defensive coaches to share knowledge of Armstrong and some of the Virginia receivers? Babers said, you bet your bottom dollar they do. They work for Syracuse University, and they better do everything they can to help Syracuse win this football game. So I can't believe that Tony wouldn't take some advantage of any kind of inside knowledge he can get. I mean, Marcus Higgins was there last year, and so was Clint Sinem. So those guys on both sides of the ball have some inside information, and I'm sure they should have shared those in meeting rooms this week when the coaches are trying to formulate a game plan.
Yeah, that's the job there. Yeah, and Brendan as a fifth-year guy, and Keaton as a quarterback wide receiver, he can probably give some insight as well, in addition to the coaches. So, yeah, definitely. I would assume that Brendan's just being coy there. You don't tell us, because we're just waiting to write headlines.
Exactly.
People click on. Don't tell us everything. Don't give away all your secrets. So that's great. Well, tomorrow night kickoff is the TV broadcast starts at 7:00. Good news, at least. Hey, there's not a game before that'll make us have to watch ESPN Plus for a quarter and a half or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
If nothing else, we got that advantage. And of course, tonight the ACC kicks off not too long from when we finish recording this podcast, West Virginia and Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. That should be a fun one. I know this weekend also Wake Forest and Clemson in a really big matchup, obviously early season matchup in the Atlantic Division. So some good games on the schedule, a few more squash matches, I'll call them, using wrestling terminology also, some more of those type games in the ACC. But Virginia gets the big stage tomorrow night. That's exciting to see. So,
Wake Forest, in the preseason, you would expect them to give Clemson a battle, but they didn't look so good last week. They were lucky to win that game against Liberty. I watched the fourth quarter of that game, and every time Wake Forest made a big play and went down the field and scored, Liberty answered each time. And I was somewhat surprised that Hugh Freeze decided to go for 2 points and win the game in regulation. I would have tied that sucker and tried to win it in overtime, but that's not what he tried to do, and they lost. Even though Wake Forest scored a decent amount of points, they didn't look like Wake Forest from last season totally. So I wonder if they'll be able to hang with Clemson this time around.
Yeah, and that Liberty team is without Malik Willis. Malik Willis is in the NFL now, and that's a rebuilding Liberty team at that. And I agree with you. Hugh Freeze going for two. I think it was like a minute 11 seconds left when he went for two. Even if you get it, you're giving Wake plenty of time to go down and kick a game-winning field goal. You know, just tie it and see what happens, maybe. But you know, that's why they pay guys like that the big bucks, I guess. And I'm there with you. Now, Clemson, on the other hand, I mean, their scores have been impressive, but I've watched enough, part of the Georgia Tech game. That one was like 14-10 third quarter. They ended up winning 42-10. Yeah. Last week against Louisiana Tech, I think it was like 14-6 at halftime. Then it was 38-6. It ends up 48-20, but, you know, it got to be 34-20 in the fourth quarter. You know, they've been kind of toying with teams a little bit. And I don't know, you know, Wake is – you don't want to toy with Wake. They, maybe defensively this Wake team is not as good as it needs to be for Wake Forest to have the kind of season it had last year. But offensively, Sam Hartman's back. They can move the ball up and down the field. If you're Clemson, you got to come out kind of like you said for Virginia, Jerry. Come out fast. Clemson's had a couple of slow starts lately. They don't want to have a slow start against this Wake team, or they might find themselves behind.
Yeah, and you can bet that Dabo Swinney and his staff are really studying that Liberty tape, because they're the only team that's really held Wake Forest offense down over the last two seasons. Because last year they averaged over 40 points a game. They were the highest scoring team in the ACC, and Liberty held them to a respectable number. So it's going to be interesting to see what Clemson might find in breaking down that tape. Getting back to that Virginia game, Chris, I'm anxious to see who starts at running back, because even though Paris Jones had a pretty decent weekend last weekend, Xavier Brown, the freshman, was very impressive throughout the game and looked good. And he was one of four backs that had touches. Cody Brown, we saw him for the first time. And then Mike Hollins who had been running with the most intensity, according to Tony Elliott, in practice, drew the ire of Tony when he fumbled down inside the two, I think. And they left a lot of points on the table. And then apparently it blamed the fumble on Brendan Armstrong. And you could tell that Tony was miffed about that and said, Tony said, if I'm a running back and I'm getting the ball inside the two, I'm going to find a way to get that ball in the end zone. And he said, and then to fumble and blame it on the quarterback is something you just don't do. So it'll be interesting to see how the rushing attempts are divvied up this week up in Syracuse.
Yeah, Hollins, that's his second fumble inside the two-yard line this year. He fumbled one in the Richmond game, recovered in the end zone, so he got the touchdown. But it was a fumble recovery in the end zone for the touchdown. And I remember the play last week, and what I remember was the snap was a little high, and Armstrong had to reach to his right to catch a snap one-handed. So there was maybe, you know, just a little bit of, like timing issue there with the handoff. But Hollins was 2 or 3 yards upfield before he fumbled. That's not on the quarterback. That's not on the exchange there. And Brown, I remember after the game, I was surprised to hear, because I hadn't seen, the fumble that Armstrong had on the sack in the third quarter inside the, 5-yard line, inside the 10-yard line. Tony Elliott said that was the result of Brown missing a block. Right. When I went back the next day, Pro Football Focus didn't give him credit for that missed block. I saw a couple plays where Brown had some good pickups on blocks. There was a free rushing middle linebacker that came through the hole. He picked up a block, and Armstrong was able to have some more time, completed a long pass. So, I mean, those are the little things. Like when you're – if casual fans is running back, he just has to run the ball, maybe catch a ball every once in a while. But you've got to be able to be part of the pass game too. And so I thought by and large he did a really good job there, and certainly, running the ball – it's a different speed, it seems like. And he also got some more heft to him. He's got a little bit more size. So, he can bring a different dimension to that running game.
Exactly. And as good as Virginia's running game has been, and as much as we think they might try to establish it early tomorrow night, you can't ignore the fact that Purdue had over 400 passing yards on Syracuse the other night. And that could be something – much to Brendan Armstrong's credit, if they can keep him protected, because I thought they made some really intelligent changes between Illinois and Old Dominion in the fact that they got a little healthier on the offensive line, but they also max protected. They kept more people in to block, and Armstrong didn't have to run for his life nearly as much against Old Dominion as he did Illinois, and they only sent out two or three, usually three receivers. And he also, Des Kitchens also employed a lot more play action passes, particularly late in the game, which kind of froze those safeties and linebackers and let those three receivers get a little more time to run the routes and get open. I don't know enough about Syracuse's defense other than what we learned, that they'll throw a lot of different exotic looks at you, but I don't know if they can play the kind of suffocating man press coverage that Illinois did. Illinois had a couple of really good defensive backs. One of them, I think, is definitely an NFL prospect. So we don't know how good Syracuse's secondary is. Giving up 400 yards to Purdue might be a little bit of a hint. But, we'll see how Kitchens decides to attack these guys Friday night.
Yeah, it seems like there's some options there, doesn't it? Yeah, if you run the ball, and if you want to, the play, there was good play action offense in the Richmond game as well, and it's one of those things. They Virginia ran for over 200 yards in each of the Richmond and ODU wins, and if you can run the ball that well, you're going to have a good play action game. At least it's an option for you. Illinois game, they couldn't establish a run, and as a result, it was a lot of just kind of chuck and duck almost back there for poor Brendan. He was under fire the whole game, and they really couldn't get a lot going in terms of that those different kind of plays. So, But yeah, I know what I was thinking of. It was a couple injury updates. One, Billy Kemp, at least as we know of from Tuesday, Billy Kemp won't be available Friday night. And there was one other player, Jerry, that Coach Elliott talked about.
Oh yeah, that was Antonio Clary.
Antonio Clary.
He had a stinger against Old Dominion, and he seems to be day to day. Although he was tackling in a tackling drill on Tuesday morning before we had the press conference with Tony, so I would expect him to be back. I don't think. I guess it's even possible that Kemp could be, because that was Tuesday.
Yes.
He came down with something. Apparently he had been practicing sick last week. We don't know what kind of sick, but he became really severely hydrated and had to get, I think, an IV. I'm not sure, either Friday night or Saturday. So he needed to be cleared by doctors. So, you know, who knows? He could have made a recovery by tomorrow night, and we'll see.
Well, we'll see. I'm of the same mind there as far as that goes. That the issue being just whatever the illness was. I guess we can rule out COVID. That's the only thing we can rule out. But he didn't have COVID. But you know, if it was a cold or a flu or something like that causing the dehydration issue, yeah. What Coach Elliott said Tuesday was he was just waiting for him to get cleared. And so with one last day with the Friday night game, that might not be an issue. Now, of course, Kemp in the Illinois game didn't even have a target, which is just surprising considering he was out there for like, you know, 40 some pass snaps and didn't get a target in that game. But he, you know, definitely a weapon for this Virginia team. So anything else football wise, Jerry, that we're thinking of with the game tomorrow night?
I think we've covered it pretty well, Chris. I think it could be one of those games like Purdue last week where Dino Babers said, he said, I'll tell you right now, it was not a fun game to coach in because there was so much offense on both sides and so much scoring in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, where it didn't seem like either team could stop each other. It could be a pretty entertaining football game.
Yeah, that game last week for Syracuse was like two different football games. I want to say the score was like 10-9 at the end of the third quarter. It ends up 32-29. Fourth quarter, like a pinball machine. The first three quarters were like an Al Groh football game. So quite a unique game there. So, yeah, strap in tomorrow night, fans, and watch all four quarters because you're likely to see a lot of different kinds of football. As far as that goes.
Oh, yeah, no question. No question.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store. As a lifelong runner, the pain in my feet was debilitating. Finally, I went into the Good Feet Store and found the answer. Personally Fit Arch Supports. They helped me so much, I ran my first marathon that year. Then because I believed in the Good Feet system so much, I bought the store. I'm so happy to offer my hometown community the opportunity to find relief from foot, knee, and back pain. The Good Feet Store is located in the Shops at Stonefield near Trader Joe's. Book your appointment today at goodfeet.com.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boast one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
Let's talk some basketball recruiting. We're not too far from the start of practice. You know, we talked about how the calendar's turned to fall now, so we're only a couple weeks away from practice starting. But still the recruiting trail, some big, at least offers, and some guys making decisions, putting Virginia in the final group among some really, really highly regarded prospects.
Yeah, GW3, George Washington III, pretty unique name for a basketball player. Virginia was, you know, recruiting him early, and then he kind of dropped off their map and committed to Ohio State. Then he took his official visit to Columbus, and I don't know what happened, but he decommitted after that visit. So he reopened. Virginia was one of the first schools out of a bunch of schools that immediately contacted him. And then this past week, he announced his final five, Virginia, Michigan, Wake Forest, Louisville, and Dayton. He also had offers from Tennessee, Auburn, and Liberty, and some other schools. But he's a four-star combo guard. Some people think he's more of a point guard. I haven't seen him play that much on video. I've seen him play both positions. He's a top 100 prospect by the consensus for the class of 2023. So he spent part of his Monday evening talking with Tony Bennett on a Zoom, and it'll be interesting. His comment was, Coach Bennett is a Hall of Fame coach. He's one of the best to do it, and they're a top ACC school. He didn't delve into Virginia that much, but so we'll have to keep an eye on him. I don't think he has set a date to make a decision. He still has to make a few visits, I believe. So that's a guy to keep your eye on. And then another guy who is a point guard in class of 23, and should he commit to Virginia, would be the highest rated player to ever commit to Virginia since they've had the ratings. I'm not sure what year that was, but it's definitely after Ralph Sampson. We're talking El Marco Jackson, and I have seen a lot of video on him, and this guy blew me away the first time I watched him. He's 6'4", 190. He's quick. He can get down the floor really fast, particularly for his size. He's a point guard. He's very athletic. I think his father and uncle were both college football players. He looks like he could be a football player. He can shoot it. He can drive. He's a three-level scorer. He loves to play defense. So the guy's the real deal. He's ranked the number four point guard in America by the On Three consensus, which is a consensus of all four recruiting services. He's number 25 overall, any player in the country in his class. That's pretty high because Elijah Gertrude, who committed last week, is number 36 and was the highest player, or is the highest player to ever commit to Virginia, and since the star rating and rankings came out. So he announced his top seven and plans to, I think, announce his commitment in mid-November. And his top seven are Virginia, Villanova, Miami, Kansas, UCLA, Texas, and Notre Dame. Pretty impressive list there. And he said that he wants to go somewhere where the coach and coaching staff pushes the players and where everybody's locked into a winning program, which sounds a lot like UVA. He also said that NIL will play a role in his decision, but it would not be the biggest factor. So we don't know exactly what that means, but I mean, you don't know with a kid that's a rising high school senior where what he's thinking. Obviously, he wants to get compensated, but can he live off of what K.A. Clark and Jaden Gardner and some of the other guys are getting with their NIL deals, or does he want something much bigger? We don't know. He did tip us off, Chris, to something that I had not heard, and I don't know if you've heard this or not, but he said, quote, Virginia is changing their offense kind of like a more European type of offense, the way they come off of screens, stuff like that. So I don't know exactly what that is. We can't ask Tony about that until ACC tip-off in Charlotte sometime next month.
And he still won't tell us then.
he may not.
If I'm him, I don't tell you.
I wouldn't tell us.
And, tell me either. That's interesting, though. You know, maybe it makes you think the wheel start turning in the old head here. The hamster's on the wheel up there. Maybe this is why you go to Italy, you know, and you play against that team that he played the last two games against, the team of so many future pros. You know,
Could be.
How to play defense against it, you know.
And of course, Isaiah Wilkins spent some time over there too. And, so yeah, it's a good point. And he is a defensive dog. I mean, he loves to play defense. He likes the way Virginia plays defense. And there's no question that he's been very impressed with Tony Bennett. He said that Coach Bennett played at the highest level in the NBA where I want to play. He played point guard, the same position as me. I feel like he's got the knowledge more so in that type of field than some of the other coaches have when it comes to getting to the NBA at that point guard spot, which is exactly true. So that weighs heavily in Virginia's favor as well. So, I mean, this could be a pretty good recruiting class, Chris. I mean, they're number two in the ACC right now. The last time I checked, only behind Duke. And, I mean, who isn't behind Duke? So if they get Jackson, and who knows, maybe they could get GW3 as well. But if they can get Jackson, that's three pretty impressive players, potentially four.
Yeah.
That
on top of this year's class, right?
I mean, top of this year's class, which is a heck of a class.
Yeah. That'd be back to back 2016 classes, basically, which one 2016 class took Virginia to a national title in 2019.
Precisely.
Which is for Virginia fans out there, you will see an accumulation of talent in one place that you've not seen before, and you've seen a national champion within the last couple of years.
We just learned today that Virginia was in Lincolnton, North Carolina at Combine Academy there, which is a national hoops program, you know, like our friends down in
Oak Hill, right?
Hill, to take another look at four-star Silas DeMary Jr., the number 61 player on Three's 2023 class rankings. He's also a point guard. Indiana was in there today too. This guy he's one of the top five available point guards in the country, which is not far behind Jackson, who's rated number four. He was down in Orlando this summer at the NBA Top 100 camp. He was first team, averaged almost 13 points, 5 assists a game, and shot 62% from the field. I'm assuming some of those were layups, and led Team Curry, I assume that Curry, to a 15-6 record on the UAA Next Circuit, whatever that is. He's taken three early official visits to Tennessee, VCU, and St. John's, and two senior year official visits to Southern Cal and NC State, and has three potential visits remaining. So he's kind of a new name on the block, I guess, for us. And he's also a high level defender, on ball and off ball, has good length, good shot making potential, and an aggressive downhill scorer with a touch that extends out to the 3-point line. So if somehow they miss on Jackson, this guy's remains a possibility.
It's impressive seeing what the staff, Tony and the staff, have done the last few months, much less the last couple of years in the recruiting trail, laying all these seeds. And, of course, everybody's coming out of COVID. I mean, they weren't able to make physical contacts with a lot of guys for a while. And you start recruiting guys when they're, freshmen and sophomores in high school. And so, impressive work there. And you've got me wanting to watch some European basketball now, Jared. I want to figure out what they do differently coming off of screens. I hate to say that. I can't envision it in my head. So now you've got me thinking. I've got to learn how they do differently coming off screens.
Yeah, I'm a little intrigued about that myself. So I don't know. I haven't watched much European basketball. So
I usually only watch it during the Olympics when they're playing the U.S. And, I'm going to do some Google research here. I'm going to get educated. This is going to be good.
Yeah. And he didn't elaborate a lot on that. He just said the way they come off screens and stuff like that. So I don't know what else stuff he might be talking about.
There's a lot in there.
I can't wait to see Tony Bennett again, because it seems like to me, Chris, and that they've offered so many more guys this year, and all 4-star level type players. So I can't ever remember Virginia being involved with so many good players than they have been the last 2 years. So you're right. They really upped the ante in recruiting, I think.
What he did with those teams back in the 2010s was he had a sprinkling of 4-star guys, but he had a lot of 3-star guys, and they just coached them up and got them to play like 4- and 5-star guys. And now, yeah, the recruiting is definitely ticked up a couple of levels here, and it's noticeable. And, it's not like they lost any capacity to train these guys. They still have Mike Curtis. They still got, the stability of the staff, Williford and all those guys. And, but they'll just have a little bit better cut of meat to work with there. If you're cooking dinner, that makes dinner a lot better tasting.
Yeah, filet mignon's a lot more delicious than some other kinds of meats that you can buy at your supermarket.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a good hamburger steak, but it'll work. But exactly. Well, Jerry, anything else got your mind on Virginia sports as we're here on the show?
I would just like to congratulate my buddy Bowen Sargent over there at UVA Men's Golf. Those guys are ranked number one in the nation, Chris. First time ever for the men's golf program. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that is just huge. And he has things going really well. He's got some solid players on this year's team, and including the sensational freshman Ben James, who could end up being the best golfer that's ever gone to school here, and some other guys. In qualifying this week, they have their own qualifying for the upcoming tournaments. I think they're playing in Florida this week. He had three guys that shot rounds of 63, and one of them wasn't James. So, wow, I'm blown away by that. But again, congratulations to him. I know he's worked so hard trying to get this program and overcome a lot of adversity trying to get it to where it is right now, and really proud of the facilities they boast over there. Also, shouldn't forget to thank our sponsors, you'll hear their commercials during the broadcast, but the Good Feet store at Stonefield, right beside Burger Bock or Burger Botch. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. I've heard it both ways. Go see those folks. If you're having any discomfort with your feet, hips, back, walking, etc., you owe it to yourself to go by and see if they can help you, because I'm pretty much guarantee you they can. Also, the Aberdeen Barn, the best steakhouse in Virginia, making my mouth water. It's supper time as we speak. I'd love to go over there right now and grab one. I don't have enough time tonight. But also UVA Orthopedics. You don't have to wear a Virginia uniform for them to help you if you have any kind of joint problem, knee, elbow, shoulder, hip. Those guys are the best in the business. They have their new facility open on Ivy Road. You got to go see them if you're having any kind of discomfort or problem. And Ragged Mountain Running Shop with Mark and Cynthia Lorenzoni, two of the most expertise runners, running coaches anywhere around Central Virginia or even the state of Virginia. They know their stuff, and they've got every kind of shoe and everything that you need for your running recreation. So go by and pay them a visit. Tell them Chris and Hootie sent you.
Thanks to all those sponsors. Indeed, they make it possible for us to do this show. And thank you for listening as well. Makes it so we have people. If we didn't have people listening, we wouldn't want to sit here and talk for a while. But we're glad that people can maybe learn some things. We learn a lot of things too. I gotta learn European basketball now.
I taught two guys this morning at a coffee shop in Charlottesville how to listen to podcasts. So that I think we picked up two more new.
There we go.
This morning.
I do that. I do that from time to time as well. Hey, it's not that hard. You can get it right here on your phone. It's not so bad.
Yeah.
So thank you again for listening. Thanks to Jerry, of course, for his time. I really appreciate being able to be on this show with you guys. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.